Recording.
Hello and welcome to the 90 Minutes with Neville Southall podcast. I'm Simon Hart and I'm here with the big man himself, Neville Southall. And for this first episode of 2024, we're delighted to have with us Mohamed Bassem Rashid, who is a footballer with the Palestine national team. Mohamed's taken time out from his preparations for the Asian Cup to talk to us about his experiences as a Palestine footballer and what it means to represent the Palestinian people at this deeply troubling time for them. Mohammed, thanks for joining us. Could you just give us an idea of how things are going there for you with the mood with the players in the camp?
First of all, nice to meet you guys. Nice to meet you, Mr. Southall, Mr. Hart. I'm really happy to be with you guys and glad to be the first on the episode on the first on 2024. So that's an honor for me. In regards to the preparations, I think they're going pretty well so far. I mean, we've had one game yesterday against Uzbekistan. We lost 1-0, but thankfully, we came out with no injuries, which is the most important part. Also, we played pretty well and we played pretty good football. I think we just have to step it up a notch to be able to score goals because we haven't scored goals regularly in the past few games. So it's just this is the little issue we have. But in football, you know, in the matters of football and playing football, we've been playing pretty well. We are where we want to be. Playing wise, but we just need to step it up a little bit more. Tomorrow's another test, you know, for the coaches to see who they wanna keep start with. It's like a test basically. Other than that, things are going pretty well with the camp physically. Mentally, it's a little bit rough with what's going on, but you know, this is what brings out good players, I think. I think football nowadays is all mental than it is physical. Being able to deal with what's happening mentally and give everything you can on the training pitch and on the match pitch, this is where it's gonna what's gonna make the difference in this tournament. And you know, we're hoping for the best.
It's going to make a difference for the people back home.
A lot of difference, because they're waiting for joy and happiness. And I think winning at least one game during this tournament will bring a lot of joy and happiness to our people back home, especially the people in Gaza. Everyone who's suffering, you know, everybody actually, I receive a lot of messages from people in Gaza, you know, asking for us to give everything and do everything that we can and whatnot, because, you know, they're just asking for all I see is we just want to be happy just a little bit watching you guys this time, you know, because of what's happening. So really it's I don't think this is pressure. I think this is a motivation. This is positive energy for us to give some, like, this is the little thing that we can give back to them, you know, for what's happening to them right now.
Well, no matter how many games you play, you will always give
We have.
90 minutes at least to your country, for your people to see, so they can be happy for 90 minutes because it'll take their mind off everything else, hopefully.
Exactly. This is the exact target that we're looking for, that to get their minds off of what's happening, just at least for 90 minutes, to live off of a dream, I say.
Could I ask, sorry, Mohammed, I was just going to ask you about the impact on the football community, the Palestinian football community. I saw that your Olympic team manager had been killed a couple of days ago, and I just wanted to ask you about the impact on yourselves as players, the people you know, friends, family.
Yeah, may his soul rest in peace. Actually, one of two of the players that two actually more than that, three or four of the players that we have been coached by this coach, and one of them played with him when he was younger. It's really sad that a lot of the players were affected by, especially the ones who were coached and played with him. It's not easy because it's not only him. We've lost him. We've lost many players who play in the Gaza League and players that are playing on the futsal national team, because many of the futsal national team players come from Gaza. And other than that, the stadiums, you know, like Al Yarmouk Stadium is like the oldest stadium in Palestine, and it's also this it's destructed. You know, they've made it like a a prisoner's, you know, like a prisoner's cell, basically. They're like humiliating the people and, like, you know, searching them naked, and it's just a unbelievable thing to see. I mean, I think honestly they're destructing the Palestinian football, not only football, sports in general, because we've lost people who are in the national team of different sports, like the judo, karate, I can't remember who else, I think swimming maybe or something, I cannot remember exactly, but we did lose a number of athletes in Gaza who were participating with the national team for different sports. So really, it's an impact on the whole sport community in Palestine.
And you personally, have you lost any good friends or loved ones?
I've lost one of my really good friends actually about 2 weeks ago. He's like a longtime buddy of mine, and him and his family were hiding in a small room, and a rocket fell on them, and his family died right away. He lived for another 2 days, but he was suffering. And I got the news from his older brother who lives in Jordan. That was really unfortunate. It was heartbreaking, but I was, you know, we saw it coming. He saw it coming more than I did, because he kept telling me in the messages that it's any time now. Every day he'll send me a message. Yeah, they're getting closer to us. They're around the neighborhood, whatever, you know. So really, it was just a matter of time that it was going to happen. And that's the sad part, that many people there are facing the same issue. They don't know if they're going to live to see tomorrow.
So are you getting much support from FIFA? So, you know, at all?
To be honest, I haven't seen anything. Like, for example, when Ukraine and Russia had the thing happen between them, the FIFA was very quick to ban Russia from their national games and whatnot, but I haven't seen anything towards Israel, so really I haven't seen anything.
So can you, I don't know what it's like growing up in Palestine, so what was it like growing up and trying to actually make your way in the football world? Was there lots of facilities? Was there lots of opportunities?
Facilities, not much. I started... it was like not even dirt. It was actually like sand. It was like really heavy sand, the pitch. That's when I first joined the academy that I grew up in. Before that, it was just playing in the streets like anybody else with the friends. But there was always challenges, you know, like, for example, going to a match in another city, and then there's like you'll go through like three or four checkpoints, and then you're late to the match. And on the way home, you have to stay in that city maybe, or sleep in someone's house in that city, because, you know, they have blockades all over the city, like all around the city you're in. And we face a lot of these things. I was actually a victim of tear gas bombs during a match. I was playing in Jabal Mukabbar last year, and it was in the final cup match, and the soldiers just started throwing tear gas bombs into the pitch for no reason. Yeah, a lot of players choked. Some of the fans were choking, and we went off the field for like 30 minutes until things calmed down a little bit, and then we went back on to continue. And there's always challenges, but we got used to it, to be honest. You know, it became like a normal routine.
Can I ask, was that in the West Bank?
Yes, it was in the West Bank. That was before I signed with Bali.
Okay.
So that brings you closer together in some ways, doesn't it, as a team?
Oh, because yeah, for sure.
Because you all
for sure, because you end up having one target to play for, you know. You all have the same goal to play for. Because right now, being in Palestine in the national team, the main goal is not, you know, Mohamed Rashid or Deida Bell or whoever. You know, we're not playing for our own names. We're playing for the name of the country.
Get a chance to play in Europe at all, or
no? I haven't. I that was my dream, to be honest. I was close one time, but it never worked. But I always wanted to play in Europe. I really had that dream. I actually was speaking to Simon about it. I was in Granada, like, I don't know how many years ago, for a vacation, and when I saw how beautiful the city was, I started looking for agents in that area to sign with them, so I can just stay there.
So I've never seen your national team play in Europe either. Is that right or not?
You're right. No, we never played any even friendly matches in Europe, because it's really hard. For one point, it's really hard to to make visas for Palestinian passports in Europe. It's really difficult. Yeah, it's really difficult. It's not easy. This is why they never bother to go and do these preparations or whatever.
I think it'd be nice to see you in Europe. I think it'd be nice to see you play again.
We've always asked, actually, with the players, we've always asked them, and it's always the same response. I don't know. Like, I've heard it from many people who worked in embassies that it's really tough to make visas or tourist visas for Palestinian passports. But I honestly don't know if it's that true. I don't know if it's that true. I can't tell you this because I don't do this job.
No, it's difficult. Yeah.
It's difficult. I was going to say, Nev, it's difficult for you even to play games in Palestine, isn't it? Because your last game there 4 years ago.
Yeah, we don't. The last game we played there was against Saudi Arabia, I think. And the World Cup qualifiers, that was like 2019, I think, something like that, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it was around that time.
And why is that?
For one, many teams don't come to Palestine because of issue like political issues. For example, Saudi Arabia, they didn't even leave the bus when they just from the bus from Jordan straight to Palestine. They didn't have to go down and stamp because they don't want to do that Israel thing. Lebanon cannot come, Syria cannot come, Yemen cannot come. Like, and these are the most teams that come in our groups for like Asian qualifiers or whatnot. So many of them cannot enter Palestine because of the issues with Israel. And the rest are just scared. You know, they're just, you know, for example, one time we had a match against, I don't know if it was Bahrain or oh man, I can't remember it, but it was in the under 23 national team. And just a week before that match, something happened, like a war came out in Gaza. I don't remember. I think it was in 2018 or something. And the team decided that they don't want to come. They said that they want to play on a neutral ground, which was Jordan. That's the closest to us. But yeah, normally even clubs, you know, when we play in the AFC or whatnot, you know, they don't come. Like Jabal Mukabir this season, they played against a Syrian team. They played against a Omani team, and the last team, I don't remember if they were Lebanese or whatnot, but they, like, two teams cannot enter Palestine. Only the Omani team can enter Palestine because of the issues.
So you can't have many home supporters in, can you?
Not really. But when we play in Jordan, we do, because many Jordanians are Palestinians. So.
Right, okay. So where are your coaches and that from? Are they Palestinian? Your management, your coaches?
The manager, the head coach, is Tunisian. His crew, the assistants, and the goalkeeper coach, and the medical staff, they're all Palestinian, yes.
Right, okay. Which makes it easier for everybody, doesn't it?
Yes, I would say so.
Well, I think it does sometimes, because they all understand the situation and they all understand what you're going through. They're going through the same.
To be honest, even the head coach, even if he's Tunisian, but he's lived in Palestine many, like most of the time he stays there, to be honest. So he sees what's going on. So he's actually more Palestinian than we are now.
So what's your structure like? What's the earliest they get into the national team? Have you got under 16s? Have you got 18s, 19s?
Yeah. You have all age groups that that compete in the FIFA tournaments are there, like 16s, 14s. You have a women's national team. You have under 23. You have first team. So it's all there.
So they get their money from UEFA then, do they, or from within the Palestine?
No, I believe from FIFA and from the Asian Federation, if I'm not mistaken, or there's also the Arab FA, or there's a bunch of them.
Just to carry on, Mohammed, before you mentioned to Nev that there'd not been much of a response, and the football authorities, well, not at all, in fact, in the way that being, for example, with the Ukraine conflict. And I wanted to broaden that out and ask you whether you feel like nobody's really given you the Palestinian people the attention that we've seen with other causes. You know, football is such a vehicle to promote things and to support people. And we've seen it with Ukraine. We saw with players taking the knee, you know, after George Floyd was killed, the Black Lives Matter. Would you like to see something like that? I mean, have you had private messages from people? What kind of response has there been?
I've seen a lot more passionate messages and emotions towards the situation in Palestine lately. It's just sad to see that something like this had to happen for, I would say, the Western world to see the real truth of what's happening, because really it's been like this for 80 years. I've lived in Palestine, you know, most of my life before going to the United States. And it's actually, it gets worse every day there. You know, people die every day. People go to jail every day for no reason. It's a very racist type of lifestyle there. You're just seeing the racism everywhere you go. And to be honest with you, I've met Jews before, you know, Jewish people, and many of them that I met in New York, for example, they're against what their government in Israel is doing. Many of them are against it, and they're looking for peace. But it's the Zionists who are just killing this ideal of peace, because, and I've seen it. You know, this is not my words. This is not my intention or anything. But I've seen it many times from their authorities saying, you know, that they want as much blood as they can get from the Palestinian side, which is kind of sick. It's disgusting to hear, and it's sad. And like I said, these are the Zionists. I'm not talking about Jewish people, because I know Jewish people are looking for peace, and I don't mix the two together, you know. It's just, yeah, like I said, it's sad to see, you know, when the double standards to what's happening, because like I said, when the Ukraine war and Russia happened, we saw how everybody jumped on. You know, even like the smallest thing was, you know, they put the Ukrainian flag in the matches, you know, like you can see it next to the scoreboard or whatever. Right now, if you actually pull out if you do this after you celebrate a goal and you have a Palestine under, you might get banned, or you might get something happen, you know, that can ruin your career. So, you know, we just saw what happened with Youssef Attal in France, or in Germany. I can't remember what team he plays for, sorry. But I think it's France. Just because he spoke the truth, you know. So, he was sentenced to jail and to pay a heavy fine. What is this, you know? To me, this is double standards. And like I said, it's a kind of a hypocritical thing to do, because at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're all trying to live the same life, you know. At the end of the day, if you're breathing the same way I breathe, so what does it? Why is it different that you have to live a certain way, and I have to like see my whole family be, you know, suffering or dying right in front of me, and I have to accept that as okay, you know?
Well, just for you, so you know, I had a Palestinian group came on my Twitter the other day and took up my Twitter to try and do a ceasefire. So we had lots, and there's a big march coming up as well soon for the ceasefire. And obviously, I think I always think, because I don't really know enough about the situation there, that it is about, for the outside world, it's about education and getting the truth, what the actual truth is. And I think in today's world, to find the truth is incredibly hard, because every paper on some social media is bent in such a way that they've all got their own agenda. So to find out the truth, I think it's difficult. When you watch it on the television, it's horrendous and it's horrific. And you think, well, any normal person would want a ceasefire just because there's people dying on both sides. Nobody wants that. But I do think because it's been going on for 80 years, I think there's a lack of education around what started it, what's happening. And for me, I mean, I'm only talking about myself, I don't understand it. I don't understand how what's going on there, because to me, I think it's very similar for me that we had a situation in Ireland where we were in Ireland as a British force, and they could never get to the end of it unless they sat down with each other and worked out a solution. Guns and rockets are not going to solve this. Sitting down and talking may solve it, but it may take a long time, and it might take somebody else from a different country to be the intermediate to bring the both parties together. But at the moment, nobody seems willing to step into that void. America sort of seems to flit in and out when it suits them, and all the other countries. But I think going back to your point with Russia and the Ukraine, Russia was always seen by Europe as the black sheep, if you like, of Europe. So it was an easy target when that happens to go with Ukraine, because what they did was wrong. But I think it's slightly different here, because Israel doesn't have that reputation, and Palestine doesn't, to be fair. But it's always loaded in the Palestinians have all the terrorists, doesn't it? So whenever you read that, it's always loaded that way. That's what I'm saying. So to get to the truth is remarkably difficult at times, and I wish sometimes there'd be somewhere we could go for the absolute truth and find out. So I suppose you're the closest we're ever going to get.
Honestly, what you said is very true. And, you know, just because, you know, you said this last and it just stuck in my head, to be honest with you, about how the world just sees Palestinians as terrorists, this is what Israel is working with, you know, because they run the media. Everybody knows that them and the U.S. run the media. This is what the image that they want. They want to show this image. But as a person, I don't like to, you know, go around the bush or whatever. I'm a straight guy. As a person who lived the life in Palestine and seen what I saw, I've been to the north of Palestine, for example, and I've dealt with Jewish people in the north, like, for example, in Haifa or in Nazareth or, you know, these areas. And I've dealt with Jewish people there. Some of them I've dealt with are really nice people, honestly. Really nice. They're hospitable. They're good people. And they're just trying to live the normal life, you know, just, you know, working, taking care of their family, whatnot. The issues that I've always had, because I live in the West Bank, is, for example, going through the checkpoint from Kalandia. For example, this is the checkpoint that splits between the West Bank and Jerusalem, East Jerusalem. You know, going through that checkpoint, man, the humiliation you see there, the way they treat, it's like little kids. They're like 18, 19, 20-year-old soldiers who are treating like these elderly Palestinian people like they're babies, you know. They're just yelling at them, smacking them around. When you see these things, honestly, like it infuriates me, because I cannot do anything about it. If I'm going to go step up to the soldier to protect this old lady or old guy, I'm going to end up in jail for I don't know how many years just for stepping up. I'm not going to hit them just for stepping up to, you know, move them away. They're going to take me to jail. This is the reason we start thinking about it, you know, that why would I do this to myself? It's going to ruin my whole life. You know what I mean? And because this is what the oppressor does. You know, they try to take away all means of life from between your hands. This is exactly how it is there. And like I said, as a person who lived there, I can tell you the whole truth of what's happening. Even though, whatever that started this whole war, in my opinion, it doesn't justify killing any innocent people from both sides. No innocent lives should be lost, you know, for things like this. But when you see the settlers taking over land, stealing land, building settlements all over it, land that is not even theirs. You know, they're just taken over with force. You know, when you see these things, what are you going to do? If you go fight for your land, you know, for example, a friend of mine, his father has around like 3 or 4 acres of olive trees in a village called Turmusaya. And I don't know how many years ago, I was a kid at the time. They wanted their land to build settlements all over it, and they started taking out the trees without his permission, without speaking to him. So he was going in the morning to his land to start picking the olives, because it was olive season. And when he went up there, he saw the bulldozers and all these equipment. They're taking out the trees from the ground, and they had soldiers with weapons, you know, protecting and whatnot. And he went up there and tried to like stop them. He brought his whole village people with him. And they threatened to shoot and kill them, and they started fighting with each other. They ended up injuring one of the guys. So this is the life that we're living there. It's, you really don't know. You don't know what it is. You don't know, like, the things that you see on the media is not even 0.5% of what really happens. And the things that we see in Gaza right now, also, it's not even half of what really, really happens. Because when my friend was alive and he was showing me, you know, I would call him in a video call sometimes when he had good internet, and he would show me, honestly, the things that you see is nowhere what we see, like what they are witnessing. The things that we see on the media is nothing what we see or what happens to them over there. It's really pathetic. It's really sad. You know, they don't even have water. He was going to the sea, to get water in buckets, and they were heating the water up to get the salt out so they can drink water because they had no other choice. There's no water, there's no food, you know, there's nothing. So, like I said, really, the real truth, we don't see it because it's hidden. But, and also, even in social media, they're blocking everything. You can't even post anything to the whole world. Like my Instagram, normally I get a lot of views on my stories. If I post anything that's related to Gaza or Palestine, that's like around a 90% decrease in views. So they're trying everything to block. So really, that's just what we're living with.
Yeah, well, hopefully people can talk, and hopefully things will settle down. And I think people will eventually turn against Israel, in as much as they all want a ceasefire. I mean, they've started it now. Hopefully they'll make sure they do have a ceasefire. And then your problems start, really, don't they? Once a ceasefire is over, it's what happens next. Do they stay on the land, move back to Israel? So that's going to be another thing. I just think it's, for you and Palestinian people, must be horrendous. We like you say, we don't know anything, and I think that's exactly. That's true of most. I think that's true. We probably don't know as much as we should do about Russia and Ukraine for whatever reason as well. But for what it's worth, obviously, we would hope that you would have a ceasefire. We would wish your team incredibly well in your tournament. We would hope you personally, all the players and staff, that you get what you want to get, which is to make Palestinians proud of you. I mean, they're already proud of you because of you play for the national team, but I've seen the effect on football and sport can have on the country, and it's massive. And it doesn't matter what the scores are, I don't think. The fact that you're putting that shirt on and you're wearing that badge will make people sit up, and you will take people out of their misery for 90 minutes. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do. I really do. So don't. I wouldn't bother with whatever goes on score-wise. It doesn't matter. The fact that you're stood on that field representing a country that's under incredible pressure, I think is brilliant, to be fair. And like I say, I hope you do really, really well. But for me, the fact that you stood on the pitch will make a massive difference to them people, because they can see somebody then, and you have a voice, and, you know, people will look and see what you're doing and see how you react. They'll see how resourceful and how dedicated and how resilient you are as a team. And I think, just to get there and just to focus on what you're doing takes an incredible amount of mental strength. So like you said before, football is a lot mental, but when you have everything else on top, I can't think of many players in the world really that have that. So for you just to be there and fly that flag for your country, I think it's remarkable.
Honestly, really, thank you so much for these words. It's amazing to hear that from you. Someone with a lot of experience, and I really appreciate it. To be honest, I'm very honored to even take this advice from you. Thank you so much, because to be honest, the pressure is more on winning because of what's happening. We just want to bring joy. But from what you said, the point of view that you gave it to me, I didn't even think about it that way. Thank you so much for that. And I'm going to make sure I pass this exactly. I'm going to call you exactly to the team, because it was amazing. It's a different point of view, I think. And it's, yeah, I think we need this. We need these kind of words, because yeah, everybody's just putting the pressure for winning, because like I said, the joy comes from winning. Especially, you know, having
where the joy comes from. Every time you take a step on that field, you've got freedom.
That's for us. Yeah, freedom is for us. The freedom is for us, the players, but not the people waiting for us. The people want the freedom from the matches. They want a result. This time, at least.
That there is freedom.
Yes, I agree.
when you go out on that pitch and you the steps you take, there will be God knows how many Palestinians stepping alongside you mentally.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're very right.
So the freedom you're giving them for 90 minutes is the freedom that you've got on the pitch. So while you can go out there, you're proving that that freedom can come. Not that you'll never get it, because you've got it. And the rest of the team have it. Every time you step on the training pitch and you go out on that pitch, you're saying to everybody back home, there is a freedom. If we can do it, then you can do it. And you will get that freedom eventually. It might not be in my lifetime. It might not be in yours. But eventually, you will get that freedom. You're
for sure.
Stepping stones for the people that come behind you. Every time you step on that pitch, there will be a child on that television now watching in probably the worst conditions that most people have ever seen, and they will reach the same standard as you. Not because they, you know, not because of anything else, but because people like you have gone and played under these conditions. Because if you suddenly said, we're not playing anymore because back home, then it would kill a lot of dreams back home. You're taking the whole dreams of people onto that pitch with you. And I think you're giving them a dream, which I think is great. It doesn't, so like I say, for me, we just don't count. There's much, much deeper things walking onto that pitch. Every time you have the anthem, you're not going to tell me that that won't actually get people together. You're telling me that when the families will gather and watch the games, the children want to be like you, the boys and the girls will want to be like you. So I think what you take on a pitch, apart from everything else, is the dreams of every other person in Palestine. And I think that's a wonderful honour to be able to take on a pitch.
I really agree with you. Thank you so much for these words, man. I don't know what to say. I'm speechless, but I'm going to keep it in my head because I need to pass this on. This freedom, the freedom, especially the freedom word. This is like it's a bookmark for me. Well, thank you so much.
You make sure you pass. So our good wishes.
For sure. This is the first thing I'm gonna have to do. We need because this push.
You know, you've got two supporters. It means time.
Two of the best.
Well, yeah. You'll always have me and Simon there, won't we, Simon?
You will. Can I just ask one last thing from me? I mean, you've both played international football. And what Nev said was very inspirational. And this idea of representing people, how do you manage that balancing act between being inspired and carrying that those people with you, but also being able to just focus on your job as a footballer? I mean, how would you be able to do that in Qatar these weeks?
It's just the thought of, you know, inspiring the people, carrying this inspiration. This is what gives me the push on the pitch, on the training pitch and on the football pitch. Just thinking of that gives me something to work for, you know. Because at the end of the day, you want to be a role model to, let's say, the generations that are going to come behind me. Because a lot of kids are going to be watching. I know this for a fact. I get messages from kids, and I try my best to always reply to them because, you know, I know how it is for a kid. If you, for example, don't answer a question to them or something, it can break their heart, you know. So to me, when I think of that, I always think of me as a kid, what I used to look for, when I used to actually, for example, look at the national team players in my country when I was a kid. I used to always tell myself I want to be there at one point. Even though I didn't have football in my mind, I just wanted to study and go to work like the normal, you know, like normal people. But when football came into the picture, just everything started to change. And I started telling myself that this is going to be a project to not only for myself, for the generations that come behind me. You know, I have to try to teach my best, teach what I learned. And you know, give them the best picture of myself to be able to perform, and you know, give them whatever I can on the field. This way they see what I do and they see the good things. Obviously, this is why I always work on myself mentally, that I don't, for example, explode on the pitch or start fighting with the players or the referee or whatnot, God forbid. Because this leaves a negative image of myself. And I don't want that, because I don't want kids to see this.
Do you know the best role models are the people who are just themselves?
This is exactly who I am. That's exactly who I am.
That's what I'm saying, Sam. You don't need to do anything different. You just have to be yourself. And when
exactly,
you walk,
yes.
Everything shuts off when you walk on the pitch. Beforehand, you can think of lots of different things to motivate you. When you go on the pitch, then your mind changes. It's a bit like a boxer going into a ring. Once you cross that line or you get in that ring, then the game's the game. Afterwards, you can look back, but you can only be yourself and you can only be you. You can't be anybody else. So as long as you're true to yourself and you give everything you can give, then nobody can ask anything else. It's really simple.
Very true. That's very true. This is the sentence. As long as you're true to yourself, nothing can change that. I agree 100% with you.
You can't be anybody else, can you? So it doesn't matter.
Nope.
And everybody's got to realise that some people play well in a tournament. Some people don't have a good tournament. But they're all there giving it all. And if everybody gives what they can give, then you can't ask anything else. Because the people back home are doing exactly that.
Yes, 100%. I agree. Actually, when I was a kid, I wanted to be exactly like Michael Ballack, the German midfielder, but I found myself as Mohamed Rashid, and I just carried with Mohamed Rashid, and alhamdulillah, I'm really glad with what Mohamed Rashid has been doing.
Well, you wouldn't want 1,000 fakes, you just want the real one.
Exactly, and this is what I'm proud of, to be honest. I'm proud of everything that I've done so far, and I just want to continue with whatever I'm doing.
Well, I think you'll be all right, and I think your team will be okay. Because, I, like I said to you before, this football, this life, and this is a mixture where you carry the hopes and dreams of everybody on your shoulders till you go on that pitch. And then you have the freedom to go and be you and do exactly what you need to do and give everything.
I love that.
And at the end of the game, you sit down and say, right, have I given my best? Yes. And that's all you can do. And that's all anybody can ever ask you. Well, as long as you do that, nobody can moan at anything.
I love it. I love this freedom on the pitch. This is amazing. I've never heard that from even a coach of mine. This is the first time I hear this. So I really thank you. I'm going to actually write that on my notebook just to keep reading it before I sleep. Because normally I write the positive things and read it before I sleep. This way I just, you know, stay focused on the positive. Don't look at anything negative, especially the next before the game. But, you know, so this is something, yeah, I need. Thank you for that. I don't know what else to say, but thank you.
So isn't that what sport's about?
Exactly, it is. It brings people together.
Yeah. Yeah, and wherever you are and whatever you're doing, you'll know that me and Simon will know who you are, and we'll know that you're a nice fella, and you're always going to give your best. Well,
oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, as a man, what else can you do?
None. Exactly what you said. Exactly right.
And I think that's the best thing about it.
Yeah, it's just as simple as that, right?
I think you are who you are, and as long as you live to whatever standards you have and you try your best, then I think that's a form of freedom. Because lots of people, if you go back to where you were walking through them checkpoints, you were never free. Tomorrow morning, you will get up on a football pitch and train or play, and you will be free. So
I have to write this down, honestly. Sorry.
No, Mohammed, Nev knows I always like to come up with one extra question, Columbo style. And if you're feeling free and things go as you want them to go on the pitch in these coming weeks, what will be success? Will it just be flying that flag for the Palestinian people, or will it be something more?
I think the success starts with us winning our first game in the Asian Cup. This is the first step to our success story, I would say, in this tournament, because we played in the Asian Cup 3 years in a row, 3 times in a row, sorry, and we haven't won one game. So, and right now we have the best group in the Palestinian national team over the history. I really, this is what we're waiting for, to win our first match, to get our first 3 points, I would say, in a group stage. So, yeah, this is the biggest thing for us right now. This is the target. And obviously, you know, winning and advancing to the next round. But, you know, to advance to the next round, you have to win at least one game, right?
Well, that's good luck.
Every mountain, right? Everest, the biggest mountain in the world, nobody conquered it straight away. They always always took their time. And sometimes it wasn't their time. And sometimes you're a stepping stone for somebody else to go further. So whatever you're achieving now, doesn't matter, like I said to you before, because all of them children that are watching may take it further. But they'll never take it further if you weren't there. They wouldn't have a chance. So by being there, you are going to inspire loads of people to follow in your footsteps. And success only comes with each bit you do. So you might only get so far that the next person will get a little bit further. Then the next person gets further and further and further. So never worry about what happens. Always think of it in terms of you're a stepping stone for the next person to come in. You're basically a pioneer, because you don't know where you go, but everyone else will be behind you. We never got to the moon, did we, without, I mean, somebody's got to be first. So it might not be your turn to be first, but it might be next year or the year after. But the first will come because of people like you. And that's what you've got to realize. All your squad, whatever happens in this tournament, people will improve because you've been there. The knowledge will improve. You know, the situation back home hopefully will improve, so that'll make it better for everybody else. Hopefully there'll be more kids playing football because you're there on television and everybody will watch it. So for me, we can look at a small picture, which is you want success personally, which is great. And the country wants a little bit of success, which is great. But in the long term, you want a sustainable football team that will take it to the next level. And you only get that by having failure, because every failure makes it easier to get to success, because it's a little step. So I think you're all winners in my eyes.
This is why they say mistakes make perfect. So you have to make mistakes to learn.
Yeah.
You know? And I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
What position do you play, Mohammed?
Center mid.
Well, there you go.
DMF. DMF. Or this is why I tell you, Michael Ballack. Yeah, he was my idol when I was a kid.
Well, you know, there's not a man alive who's played football who's had a stress-free life. Nobody.
Oh yeah, for sure. I agree. It's always there. Even in your house, you feel stressed.
Yeah, but also not a man alive who's never had a bad game. Until
awesome. Oh, for sure.
Until you retire, and then you're brilliant. You know, nobody can say I'm crap anymore. Miles was playing, so I'm really happy.
I want to interview you. What's the best team you played for? Where is the best team that you had the best time in your career?
I'd say in the 1980s, probably 84 onwards, 83, 84 onwards, till about 87, 88. We won a lot.
With Everton?
Yeah.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. It was a good time, to be fair, but you get nothing for nothing. So you always have to put your time in. I worked hard, and they looked at every other sport that could help me. I looked up
for sure.
The weightlifting. I looked at gymnastics. I looked at all the other hockey goalies, the wicket keepers, everybody. I looked at the golfers to see how they kept the concentration between holes. I looked at everything I could look at to give me a 1%. Because I think your body does nothing without your brain.
Yes.
I think so. All you've got to do is concentrate on your mind, because your body will take it anyway. Your mind tells it to go. So, and when people say they can't do stuff, that's complete bollocks to me, because you can do what you want to do. Joe, and you've come from America. like you've lived in the States, haven't you? Where it's not about you can't do, it's about what you can do.
Yes, exactly.
So
no, I think the mental, I think the mental part of the game is the most important, to be honest. It's not even physical anymore.
No, it's not, because you're always gonna, all you gotta do is whatever position you play, you work out your opponent, you work out their weaknesses, you work out their strengths, and then you overcome and you win your battle. And then if you win your battle, because you can only control you, everybody else is going to win their battles. So all I focused on was looking after me. I do my job properly, and I do my job the best I can. And if I do that, then I can't control everybody else. So I will let them control me. Just do my job. I'm going to come off the pitch. I know I've done
this This is exactly how I run my life, to be honest. Whatever, anything that I can control, I can take care of. I'll control it. Anything that's out of my control, that's in God's hands, is not in my hands. You know, I can't change it. I'll try my best to deal with it, but I will not, you know, like, for example, fuss about it or get angry about it or whatnot. Whatever I can control, I'll change. You know, but anything out of my barriers, not my problem.
And you can't change history. So I can't change what I did yesterday. So I don't worry about it.
Sure. I just worry about it. Well, you did 2 minutes ago.
Just try next bit. So don't worry about anything else, because even if you had a great game, it doesn't matter, because you're on to the next bit. You're on to the next bit.
Exactly.
When you retire, you can put your feet up, go and get your olive trees out, pick a few up, and chill out in the sun, mate. That's here, isn't it?
And just keep juicing the olives out, from the olives. That's it. What about Huddersfield? You played there too, right? Huddersfield,
yeah. Well, I didn't play there. I coached there.
Oh, I had a friend in my university in Chicago. He was from there, from Huddersfield. We actually, at the time, I can't remember what year it was, when they had Aaron Mooy, the guy from Australia, and the midfielder. He was playing with them at the time in the Premier League.
I wasn't in the Premier League with them. I was in the First Division with an ex-Wales manager of mine, Teddy Orff.
Oh, no, this wasn't too long ago, but I'm saying that he was there. And, you know, I tried to, you know, we had a little contact because I played against Australia one time. And, you know, I asked him about Huddersfield and whatnot. But he didn't tell me too many good things, to be honest. So I don't know.
So, you know, the Palestinian team, at what level are they at if you compare it to the Premier League or the Championship or League One or League Two? Where would you say that was?
What, the players, you mean, or the team in general?
Well, the standard of the team.
Yeah, I don't know. Premier League, definitely not. Championship, maybe, you know, the lower level teams in the Championship, I would say.
Yeah.
Around there. I mean, we played Australia last month. We had a very good game. They beat us 1-0, but it was kind of a stinker, like they say. We should have at least came out with a draw. We had a really good game against them. When we come out to play, it's different, to be honest. But sometimes, you know, when we play those big teams, I would say Australia is one of the giants in Asia. Sometimes the coaching staff gets a little worried. They get scared. They play with five defenders and whatnot. But lately, since I would say October or November, he's been playing 4-4-2, and he's working on 4-4-2, you know, to make it more attacking and beneficial for us. And it's been working a lot better for us. You know, like I said, we played against Australia. We had a really good game. We lost 1-0. We had, you know, like 3 or 4 clear chances to score a goal, but, you know, it was just unfortunate. I think the level's there. We have a striker that plays in Belgium right now in the top league. And he's kind of, you know, we rely a lot on him attacking wise because the kid has a lot of talent. So you know, he's one of the big players that we have that can do a lot of change in the team. But like I said, being Palestinian, sometimes it's hard to play in Europe. Like, it's really difficult for him, for example, to go to a better league or a better club, because many times, like, I had this issue in the Saudi league before, that when I was trying to sign for a team in the first division, they thought I was American because I went there under my American passport the first time. Right. And when they found out I play for Palestinian national team and whatnot, they got afraid of their fans to go, you know, start talking to them and whatnot, because they ended up signing a Greek player. And it kind of devastated me for like a few days, but then I got over it because I know this is the life that we live. So I didn't like, you know, talk about it too much.
Now, how did you find getting to America then?
Sorry?
How did you find getting to America then, living in the States for a bit?
I have an American citizenship
Oh,
through
right,
my
okay.
dad.
Right, okay. So
Yeah,
we're
yeah. My
where
Sorry, I broke up.
whereabouts in America were you?
Chicago. I lived in Chicago.
You can
Yeah,
tell by.
but yeah, but I don't, especially now, but I normally I don't say this to anyone, to be honest, but it's on my transfer market, they have the dual citizenship on there, so really it's kind of hard to hide it, but I don't like to talk about it because especially for what's going on right now, because it's a shame, you know. But I would lie to you if I say I'm not grateful for having it, because it opened up a lot of doors for me, you know, for college and whatnot, because in Palestine it's really hard to get an education, you know. We don't have the best schools, I would say. So yeah, like I said, I would lie to you if I say I'm not grateful for having an American passport, but at the same time, I'm ashamed of it because of what they're doing.
Well,
Well,
Janu, it's been so interesting. I mean, is there anything you'd like to close with, Nev?
not
To be
really.
honest, sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, go
No,
ahead.
all I was going to say was, look, just to wish you all the best and your team all the best, and I hope it all goes well for you. And I hope it
Thank you
goes
so much.
better for your country.
I really hope so too, and thank you so much. And what I wanted to say is thank you so much. Thank you both. And thank you so much for the inspirational words. Honestly, this was the best interview I've had in the past 3 days. I've had maybe like over 10 so far, and this was the best one. It benefited me more than, you know, the other ones, honestly, because everything was more personal, I would say, because it gave me a lot of push. So thank you so much for that. And it was really nice talking to you guys. And it was really nice hearing from you, Mr. Safa. So thank you. Thank you a lot for the amazing words.
Well, let's hope that you get through the next round and we might be able to do something else.
For sure. I hope so. Man, if you want to take me to Everton, I wouldn't tell you no.
Thank you. We need a midfielder. But no, best of luck. Thank you. Thanks, Nev.
Thank you, Sam.
Nah,
Thanks.
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. See
Pleasure,
you.
mate. See you later.
Bye.
Cheers.
Brilliant. Bye.
Bye.